Do you ever say yes at work and regret it later? What if better productivity isn't about saying yes more often, but learning the art of the graceful no?
In this episode, we'll explore how to say no politely, confidently, and professionally, especially in global workplaces where communication styles vary. So let's get ready to take back control of your time, starting now.
Welcome to the Fluent Edge podcast, where your English skills meet personal growth. I'm Sean Watson, English communication coach and accent clarity specialist.
And I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, leadership coach, author, and mindset strategist. So let's start with why saying no is so hard. And it can be hard emotionally. You know, twins who grew up in exactly the same circumstances, the same family, it can be hard for them to say no to each other, having nothing to do with different cultures. But it's also culturally fraught, especially when you're trying to do it in a second language. So what's the problem that you see?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to recognize that it's not only about vocabulary. It's not about which phrase should I use. But it's also about power, it's about culture, it's about relationships. For example, in collectivist cultures, such as Japan or India or Brazil, if you say a direct no, it can sometimes feel rude or selfish. In more individualist cultures or contexts, like the US or Germany, or maybe even Australia, people often respect clear and direct answers. A polite but firm no can show confidence or decisiveness. For many non-native English speakers, they wonder, which rule book should I follow? I think that's where cultural code switching comes in, this ability to know when to change how you react or how you respond, and adjusting your communication to fit the culture and situation.
So I've heard culture defined as a set of behaviors and ways of thinking that are either rewarded or punished. So with that in mind, the way you say no to somebody else who's not used to it, they can interpret it as that you are a bad person or a rude person or a mean person.
One of the issues that my clients face is immigrating to a Western country and not only learning the language, but understanding the cultural cues and understanding when it's okay to be really direct and when it's better to be indirect. It really comes down to reading the room. And I think in some companies in Canada is often considered a middle context country because it's kind of a combination of harmonizing with your environment and showing decisiveness or confidence. So a lot of my clients are asking, how do I work within Canadian culture, but also inside Canadian culture? What happens if I'm working in a very multicultural environment? How do I respond? So they might have a manager from India who wants people to be more respectful with their refusals. Whereas if you're in the US, for example, and an American colleague invites you to a last minute meeting, I think being clear is usually best. So you could say something like, thanks for thinking of me. I won't be able to make it today, but please share the notes. So there's an acknowledgement, and there's also an offer of reading the notes. So you still show interest, but you decline your physical availability for that. Whereas if you're in a culture like Japan, one of my students taught me this word a while ago in Japanese. I believe it's pronounced chotto. And chotto can mean a little bit or a bit, but it can also be an interjection, like the word well. So in Japan, if somebody asks you to do something, the response might be something like chotto. And chotto can just be kind of an interjection. And then there's a little pause. And that usually means I'm not available or I can't work with you right now. Or sometimes Japanese people will just simply say something like, that could be a little difficult right now. So instead of saying, I'm sorry, I'm not available, there's still this emphasis on harmonizing the situation. In both cases, I think that it's a question of tone, for sure. And that's really what cultural code switching is about. It's not just the vocabulary, but it's also the intention and the way that we say things.
When you start with thanks for thinking of me, that's assumptive, right? That makes the assumption that the request was a favor to you, which is a little bit of, to go back to Japanese culture, a little bit of conversational jujitsu, especially when the person was saying, I need you at this meeting. And you say, oh, thank you so much for thinking of me. That can create goodwill out of thin air. One of the things that I have seen a lot in the personal growth space in the Western world, and this is especially people talking to women, and they say something like, no is a complete sentence, by which they mean you don't have to justify, you don't have to negotiate, you don't have to argue, you don't have to give excuses. You can simply say no, and you don't have to feel guilty. And I wholeheartedly applaud the sentiment behind it, that you can say no without feeling guilty, without twisting in knots. But the truth is that no is not very often a complete sentence. If you asked me something, if you, Sean, we've been good friends for 40 years, if you asked me something, if you said, hey, could you do this with the podcast? And I said, no, that's rude, right?
Yes. Yeah. Unless, even if you change your tone. I'd be considered rude. Like, no.
Well, I don't know if you remember some of my roommates when we were living in Jerusalem, they had a thing where two or three of them were rooming together at their university in the States, and they knew each other from before. And one of them was very low context, like, just be clear, just say what you mean. And they would be eating at dinner, and one of them would say, hey, does anyone mind if I have this last piece of chicken? And somebody definitely wanted that last piece of chicken. And so they started training themselves to say no. And so as a joke, they say, hey, could you pick up some toilet paper on the way home? No. And it became funny because it was so over the top rude that it became, it's almost like guys punching each other to show how affectionate we are. Right.
It's awesome. That's a great story. Yeah. We talked a little bit about middle context cultures, but students have told me from Brazil and Mexico, for example, that you often have to empathize or praise people before refusing something, right? So they might say something like, I'd really love to help, but my schedule is full this week. So it's not avoiding being honest. It's just kind of protecting the relationship.
Yeah. What the other person is doing, you see it having value and you see them as a good person for wanting to do it, as opposed to dismissing it. Like, Sean, why would I do that? That's a waste of time.
Exactly. And in hierarchical cultures, for example, in China, sometimes saying no to a manager can feel risky. So people use respectful delay phrases like, I'll try my best, or I'll need to check with my team. But in both cases, that kind of quietly means probably not. And I think when we have like a melting pot society, like the US or Canada, when suddenly you have lots of people arriving from all over the world, there is a lot of cultural confusion in the beginning. And even for myself, for the first 20 years of my life, I spent a lot of time outside of Canada. And when I would come back and reconnect with childhood friends, I could feel that I was somehow missing part of the code, not of refusing or saying no, but just general conversation. I could feel that there was a difference in the way that we were relating to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think at one point I kind of felt like, oh my gosh, that's permanent. Like, I'll never be able to lock in to their code of how they communicate. But now that I've been back in Canada for more than 25 years, I feel quite comfortable, but I think because I was away for so long, I lost the ability to kind of connect to that code of conversation. Yeah.
The world being so much more global now than it was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, with video conferencing, globalization, there's more grace around people who come in and who demonstrate curiosity and a desire for respect. So I could imagine myself going to another country and having a request that I want to say no to and saying, what's the polite way to say no to that? And I don't know if that would work or not, but that would be my inclination.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great strategy. And I think in countries like Canada, which is kind of an adaptive culture, a little bit similar to Singapore, which has a lot of people from different parts of Asia and other countries working there, we have to kind of shift our styles depending on who we're talking to. That's why I think sometimes some countries are slightly more nuanced than just simply low context or high context cultures.
Yeah, I think it's a truism that within any culture, there will be much wider differences in individuals than the mean of two cultures. So whatever we're talking about here are generalizations, especially as the world culture becomes more homogenized. There has been a valorization of, say, the Silicon Valley ethic in places that I would never have expected it, like Portugal, like Costa Rica. So you have people there behaving like tech bros, right? And saying like, right. Oh, look how successful they are. Let's emulate some of their habits.
As I'm listening to you speak, I'm thinking about late night talk shows like John Oliver or The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. You wouldn't believe how many people I speak to around the world who tune into those guys regularly. And when I was growing up, if I thought of David Letterman or some of the other late night shows, that was so restricted to North American culture. But now a lot of the cultural references that they make have become globalized too.
Interesting.
I think it's more unification of experience, like more people are sharing the same humor. I think even with Netflix, for example, because we have access now to so many different films or TV series from different countries and cultures, I think that also contributes to maybe a deeper understanding or space for different ways of reacting to situations.
It's funny you should mention Netflix because I'm learning Spanish and I'm using Netflix and I have to find things that are Spanish originals. So I'm watching a Spanish series. The first thing I do is I watch it with English subtitles. And so my ears are listening, but I'm understanding English. And I'm noticing as my Spanish listening gets better, I'm noticing differences in translation because they're trying to translate idioms. They're translating puns. They're translating intensity. And so what they say in Spanish, they have to do very differently in English to get the meaning across. And that's sensitizing me, especially the curse words, which in English tend to be much more sexual. In Spanish tend to be much more about excrement for whatever reason. But in a world in which now there's going to be, you know, AI auto dub and AI captioning for everything, it's interesting to see how much more aware people will become, whether in fact we will need to learn other languages, or I could just say at some point, I'll say, no, forget about it. And the translation will be, I'm so sorry, Sean, I have so much on my plate. I'm, you know, almost like a comedy where the translator is saving the speaker from themselves.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you said about expletives and the difference between swearing in North American culture compared to Spanish culture. In Quebec, in French Canada, all of their expletives are connected to the Catholic Church.
Oh.
So even the chalice for communion in French, calice, is like saying F-U-C-K. Or even the table where the priest puts all of the various things that they use for ritual. The table in English would be like a tabernacle, but in French, tabernacle is also like F-U-C-K in English.
Oh, right? Okay.
And that's just so bizarre because in France, it's more like Spain. I think a lot of the expletives are either sexual or connected to bodily functions. But in French Canada, the Catholic Church was the center of Quebec life. So literally every swear word is connected to some word you use at church.
Mm, that's fascinating because that reminds me of a lot of the like old English curses like bloody or ruddy.
Yeah.
By the blood of Christ, or rude was a word for the cross, ruddy.
That's right. I'd forgotten about the connection between rude and the cross. So I guess that did exist to a certain degree in Anglo-Saxon culture, or maybe we could do another podcast just talking about expletives.
Oh, I'm all over that. That's my first language.
That's my real wheelhouse. So let's move on to some questions that some of my clients have asked over the years that are exactly connected to this topic of, you know, how do we respond or how do we refuse things? And maybe these are things that you can answer from your perspective as a leadership coach. So one of the questions people have asked is, how do I stop feeling guilty after saying no, even politely?
So the question is, why do you feel guilty? Do you feel guilty because you think you should have said yes because it was the right thing to do? Because guilt is a set of neurological feelings, but we have the emotion within us to course correct when we have done something wrong, when we have harmed other people, essentially, or harmed the world, our animals or the environment, but have done external harm. So I would say if you're feeling guilty, that's probably ingrained in you from a very young age. There are cultures that tend to use guilt a lot to control children's behavior. And that often gets installed in us when we are very young, before we're aware of language even. And so guilt might have nothing to do with rationally, I think I've done something wrong, but it just reminds me of how I was controlled. So a child runs out into the street, a two-year-old child runs out into the street, and the parents use guilt to keep them safe. That's a bad thing to do, right? 2-year-old.
Right. You know, it's like you don't want to make mommy sad. You don't want to make mommy angry, right?
Yeah.
All of this.
Yeah. So the answer to stop feeling guilty about disappointing other people is to recognize that pattern and to be very clear with yourself. It's like, oh, this reminds me of times when people used guilt to control me. And this is different. I'm an adult. They're an adult. We operate here based on consent, not on manipulation. And I can notice those feelings can still come up. I could still feel it. But the question wasn't, how do I never feel it? Is how do I stop feeling it? Oh, I feel
right.
It. Oh, this is an echo from the way I was raised, the way I was conditioned. And that can help you let go of it. Like Sean, you're not my daddy. I got to remember that, right? You got a little beard, you wear glasses, you have a low voice, right? Back of my mind, authority figure. And I don't want to say no to authority figures because when I feel guilty, then I don't say no to you. And that protects me from your punishment.
Excellent. So here's another question I've heard. Why do I keep saying yes when I know it hurts my performance?
I would say the answer to the second question is the same as the answer to the first question, that you're saying yes because it's protective. In that moment, the emotions that are coming up for you are screaming that you are going to be endangered if you say no. And think of all the things that human beings do that provide short-term relief or benefit and long-term pain, right? People who want to quit smoking might have the cigarette, I need it right now, even though I know it's going to hurt me later. So why do I keep saying yes when I know it hurts my performance down the line? Because it feels protective. So the way to get around that is to start doing little experiments, saying no in a lot of the ways you talked about, with people you trust. You can even role play it with a friend a few times and say, you know, your friend says, can you help me clean my garage? Can you drive me to the airport tomorrow? And you say, oh, I'm sorry, I have other commitments that I have to honor. And practice discovering that it's not a dangerous thing.
Okay, how can I see no as a strength instead of a weakness?
No is the thing that protects your priorities. So if you see yes as a strength, yes means I'm committing resources. I'm committing myself to this. And that's a beautiful thing. If you can't say no, then you are committing yourself to so many things, you have no power, right? It's like a flashlight where the beam is so diffuse, it can't even light up a wall 3 feet in front of you. So the no is what focuses your power on your priorities, on what matters most to you. And that could be the task, but it could also be the relationship, right? I don't care about your garage one bit, but I will come over and help you clean it because of our friendship. So when I have no, then my yes means something.
Yeah. So just to review again, these different contextual cultural situations, just so our listeners and viewers can catch this if they haven't heard these terms before. So I include middle as well as high and low context cultures, but I think for low context cultures, it could be the US. Germany is quite low context, the Netherlands, Australia. So this means that direct communication is valued. Clarity and efficiency are seen as signs of respect. So people might say, I appreciate the offer, but I have to decline. Or that doesn't align with my current priorities. And if we're talking high context cultures like Japan or Korea, or maybe some Arab countries, harmony and relationships take priority over clarity. So they might use softer alternatives like, that might be difficult right now, or I'll need to think about that carefully, or let me see what's possible. And then if you look at some other countries in Latin America, they might think that politeness and warmth are the most important elements of answering. So they might say, I'd love to help, but my plate is full this week, or maybe next time. I really appreciate you asking. So again, these are generalizations, and I know some of our listeners will say, well, yeah, that's not really true about my country, about Brazil or Mexico. But again, these are just kind of general guidelines. I thought maybe we could go through a list of ways to politely say no professionally in low context cultures. So let's try the first one. I appreciate the offer, but I have to decline. And maybe Howie, you can try the second one.
I'm honored, but I'm not available right now.
Very nice. Thanks for thinking of me, but I can't take this on at the moment. And there's an interesting phrase, I can't take this on. I can't accept this on myself right now to take this on. And what about the next one?
That doesn't align with my current priorities.
Okay, cool. And the next sentence you can use, this is a way of buying time. So if somebody asks me to do something and I say, let me check my schedule and get back to you. So get back, just for those who don't know that phrase, get back is just to follow up or to reply, to get back to somebody. So that's a way to buy time. Let me check my schedule and get back to you. And maybe we can skip ahead to number 8.
Yeah. I can't help directly, but I can connect you with someone who might.
Yeah, that's great. And I love your intonation there. I can't help directly, but I can connect you with someone who might. And that's something that we haven't talked about very much today. Like there you said, I can't help directly, right? Instead of just being flat and saying, I can't help directly, but I can connect you with someone who might. It's too robotic. And let's try a couple of very, very short and simple role plays. So imagine you're asked to stay late at work again. So here I'll be the manager and Howie can be the employee. So if I say, hey, Howie, could you stay an extra 2 hours tonight to finish this project?
Sean, I understand how urgent this is. Unfortunately, I have commitments after work today. Could we look at options for tomorrow?
Yeah, you see, that's lovely. You're being apologetic. You're showing that you understand how urgent it is, but you're gently suggesting an alternative time to do it.
If this was a movie and they had thought bubbles, like what I would actually be thinking if you asked me at 4 PM if I could stay till 8, right?
Yes.
Another lesson is you don't have to say everything you think.
Indeed. And I know there's that proverbial situation 1 hour before you're planning to go home and suddenly somebody dumps more stuff on your desk. Okay, so here's another scenario. A colleague invites you to a last minute meeting. So Howie, can you jump into this client call in 30 minutes?
I'd love to help, but I'm in back-to-back meetings already until late afternoon. I can review the notes afterward, if that helps.
Excellent. And back-to-back means that you have one meeting after the other, with no break in between, back-to-back meetings. In both examples, it's kind of balancing empathy and clarity. So you're still helpful, but your time stays protected somehow.
And starting with, I'd love to help, again, validates the relationship and validates the worth of the endeavor.
And endeavor just means what?
The thing you're putting energy into. That this client call that you've asked me to join is important. I'd love to help. There's another thing that you're communicating when you say no, when you give a reason that you are saying, I keep my commitments because I have commitments, I have other priorities, I'm honoring those. They precede what's happening right now. And therefore, I'm the sort of person who, when I make a commitment to you, there's a underlying meta message that extends through the relationship beyond this particular transaction.
So here's a little hack for you, a hack of the week. Some people call this the bridge strategy. This helps you to avoid burning bridges and building bridges instead, right? Number one, you want to acknowledge the person who's asking you. So something like, thanks for asking. You're acknowledging them. You're respecting what they had to say. And then you want to decline clearly in low context cultures, especially. So I won't be able to take this on right now. I won't be able to. I'm unable to. But then for number 3 in the hack, maybe you could offer something else. Maybe we can revisit next week. There's a good word, to revisit, to go back to this situation. Or maybe you could say, have you asked Joe? Have you asked Mohammed? Have you asked Susan as an alternative?
Yeah, you can soften the blow of saying no by offering something. So maybe we can revisit next week might be good. But if you're going to say no again next week, a different thing to offer would be, let me think about who I could introduce you to. Or I can't help, but I wrote a paper on this. I'll be happy to share it with you. Or I just watched a TED talk on this very topic. Let me send you my notes. Buying time can be great, especially let me check my schedule and get back to you. And buying time is a very useful tactic in negotiation as well. My wife and I have a rule. We don't spend more than X dollars on the spur of the moment, impulsively. So if I see something, that's more than $100, I have to think about it. I'm not allowed to come home with it. So it's just a protective mechanism. We don't want to be always buying time, though, because then we're going to have the same conversation again and again. And after buying time, I might feel more pressure to say yes when I'm just doing it to avoid discomfort now. So we want to be able to think about how can I help in a way that is finite and discrete so that doesn't extend beyond what I'm offering and provides value within the resources that I am freely willing to offer.
Well said. We'll just look at a few idioms for polite refusal. So the first one is to be spread too thin. So imagine if you have a piece of bread and you're putting on your peanut butter or your jam, you're spreading, right? You're making sure that the jam or peanut butter cover the full surface. So if you're working too hard or you're too busy, you've committed to too many things, you're spread too thin. So I could say, I'd love to help, but I'm spread too thin this week. Another idiom that we use is not my wheelhouse. This is not your area of expertise. It's really not your specialty. So I could say something like, this project is outside my wheelhouse, but I can recommend someone.
I looked up wheelhouse because I realize I say it all the time. It refers to the room in a ship where the wheel is, the steering wheel. And the captain's job was to be in the wheelhouse. And nobody else's job was to steer the ship. Other people had to swab the deck or pull on the rigging or move the sails or work in the kitchen or work in the boiler room. But the idea of the wheelhouse was a very specific, limited set of responsibilities.
Interesting. So you've got a couple of other idioms here, Howie.
Yeah. So one is to draw the line, to set a clear limit, to set a boundary. So for example, I've drawn the line at working on weekends. And along with that is to put your foot down, which is to be firm or assertive. So it's time to put my foot down and protect my focus. And one of my favorite jokes involves this idiom. And so I want to tell it so that people can see the irony in the phrase. So my wife told me I had to stop standing like a flamingo. So I had to put my foot down.
That's awesome. That's perfect. Yeah, I remember when I was in Europe the last time. I think it was when we were in Sardinia, which I know you visited recently too. But I think we actually saw a flock of flamingos in the south.
We saw flamingos. Villa Simius. It's like that's the symbol of that part of the island, is the pink flamingo.
Is it really? I didn't realize it was that much of a symbol, but it's funny because I always associated flamingos with tropical places. I didn't think of the Mediterranean as a flamingo habitat.
Yeah, I was surprised too.
But great joke.
Thank you.
So these idioms that we've shared with you just make you sound confident. They're not rude. So it's okay if you say something like, I've drawn the line at working on weekends. It's very firm. And again, these idioms that we've shared with you, they're specifically good for low context cultures rather than high context or middle. So here's a challenge for you, our listeners or viewers. Maybe you could try writing 3 professional refusals using this bridge strategy. So for example, you could talk about turning down a meeting, declining extra work or an extra assignment. And for number 3, you could be setting a boundary with your manager. And what do you think of that, Howie, for a listener challenge? Do you think that would be useful?
I think it would be useful for me, to be honest.
Maybe we should all do it.
And why I say it's useful for me is because now I have something prepared, because you can feel like you've been ambushed by a request and you can become flustered. And when we're flustered, we don't tend to communicate well. So having these in our back pocket, another useful idiom, means that when the moment comes up, you can feel more prepared.
Yes. To add on to that exercise, I think it's important to say these phrases out loud and even try recording yourself and listen for tone, listen for that intention, that emotional intention behind what you're saying, and think about the pacing as well. It's always good to think about slowing down, especially when you're telling people that you're not available. You don't want to be too quick about it. Work on your confidence as well. It needs to sound confident, especially in low-context cultures. If you enjoyed this episode, share the Fluent Edge podcast with someone who's improving their English or communication skills. And if you want deeper coaching, we've both opened up a few one-on-one spots. Howie helps professionals lead with purpose.
And Sean helps you speak with clarity, confidence, and global presence. So you can book a free discovery call with him to see how he can strengthen your English and impact together. Thanks for listening. Keep growing your clarity, your courage, and your voice.
Remember, every smart no protects your energy and keeps your best yes available. See you next time.
Yes.